This morning's public read comes from 1 Samuel chapter 8. So let's turn there, 1 Samuel chapter 8. Now please bear in mind, we left off last week reading when the nation comes to Samuel. They remind him of how bad his two sons are. And using all of that and using all of their chicanery as maybe their platform, they cry out for a king to be like the other nations. And this really grieved Samuel, because Samuel knew their king was the one who made covenant with their forefathers. And just like in John chapter 19, as I shared that last week, the same crime of high treason is committed again, only this time the Messiah is on earth in a flesh and bone body on trial for his life. And the Jews of that day say, "We have no king but Caesar." And if Pilate was so foolish to let this man go free, referring to Jesus, then he was no friend of Caesar. And therefore they committed high treason as well. God told Samuel, okay, give the people what they want, but you're going to tell them what type of king they're going to have. With that in mind, look at verse 10. And Samuel told all the words of the Lord unto the people that asked of him a king. Okay, and he said, this will be the manner of the king that shall reign over you. So these guys were going to walk into this situation, beloved, with full knowledge. God was keeping back no secrets. God was hiding none of the facts. This will be the manner, or the style, or the fashion, or the behavior of the king that shall reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them for himself, for his chariots, and to be his horsemen, and some shall run before his chariots. So he's going to draft. He's going to conscript the young, fit Jewish men to be his servants in his army and to take care of the weapons of warfare. And he will appoint him captains over thousands and captains over fifties. So he's going to create a bureaucracy and will set them to ear his ground and to reap his harvest and to make his instruments of war and instruments of his chariots. So notice, a bureaucracy is now created, a hierarchy of worker and worker bee. He will take your daughters to be confectionaries and to be cooks and to be bakers. Even the ladies are not out of his reach. And he will take your fields and your vineyards, your olive yards, even of the best of them, and give them to his servants. We call that taxation. And he will take the tenth of your seed, tax, and of your vineyards, tax, and give to his officers and to his servants. And he will take the men servants and your maid servants and your goodliest young men and your asses and put them to his work. Notice, he's going to take what belongs to you and keep it to himself. He will take the tenth of your sheep, tax, and ye shall be his servants or slaves. And ye shall cry out in that day, because of your king, which ye have chosen you. And the Lord will not hear you in that day. Nevertheless, the people refuse to obey the voice of Samuel, and they say, nay, no, but we will have a king over us, that we also may be like all the nations, and that our king may judge us. I thought God was their judge through his word. And go out before us and fight our battles. I thought God is the one who goes before us and fight our battles. Notice the treason. And Samuel heard all the words of the people, and he rehearsed them in the ears of the Lord. And the Lord said unto Samuel, hearken unto their voice, make them a king. And Samuel said unto the men of Israel, go ye every man unto his city. Please be seated, and may God choose to bless his word. Wonder of wonders. Isn't this amazing? Isn't this amazing? People cry for a king. Grieves the heart of Samuel. And again, we're not putting aside the corruption of his two sons. Isn't it amazing? Eli had two corrupt boys. And Samuel replaced Eli. Samuel has two corrupt boys. And now he's going to be replaced with a king, or by a king. Isn't that amazing? How history can repeat itself, unfortunately. And in verse 11 and following, what do we see? We see what a king is going to do. This is the manner. In verse 11, myself as ex-military, I see a draft. The king is going to conscript the young, vibrant fruit amongst the men of Israel and enlist them into his army to ride his chariots and to go before his own chariot. Then in verses 12, we have the creation of a bureaucracy, and we know how bureaucracy works in our land. He will appoint him captains over thousands and fifties and such. He breaks it down into kind of like a working pyramid or like an organizational chart, if you will. All right? And then he's going to have these individuals, the people working the fields are going to be working for the heads of these bureaucracies to bring in the harvest, to create the spears and the bows and the arrows and the chariots and the instruments of war. So you have a military-industrial complex being developed and being supervised by men who work for the king. We call that bureaucracy. And then he's going to be touching the young gals, the young ladies of the nation. He's going to enlist them to be cooks and maids, to clean his palace, to cook his food, and to bake his cookies. And then in verses 14 and following, we see the taxing, taking from the people from the land a portion of their livelihood will go to him to sustain him and the men and the soldiers under his command. What do you find? Bureaucracy. Verse 16, he will take your men servants and maid servants, your goodliest young men. Notice, he's not going to take the senior citizens. He's going to take the young, fresh, strong, vibrant youngsters. And they're going to take care of his donkeys, his asses, his sheep, his whatevers. He will take the tenth part of your sheep, verse 17, more taxes. And he and ye shall be his servants. Literally slaves. And then notice verse 18. There is always, beloved, the consequences of our decisions. A time would come, Samuel gives them a pre-warning. A time will come when you're going to cry because of your king that you have chosen. And when you eventually read the kings of Israel and of Judah, beloved, there were some real nasty kings who did some real nasty stuff. We even have a couple of queens who were also nasty as well. And they brought so much havoc and so much pain and so much misery upon God's people. And those people cried. They cried. But then look at verse 19. Now again, in verse 11, Samuel said, "This will be the manner of the king that shall reign over you." They did not walk into this arrangement blindly. Okay? Nobody forced them to look for a king. Nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel, and they said, "No way, but we will have a king over us." So, even here, in the, again, there's been a number of centuries since this nation has been brought together at the foot of Sinai. I understand that. But we're still looking at the beginnings of this nation in comparison with the rest of Old Testament history and then bleeding over into the public life of Christ. Here we are, after all that they've gone through, after all that they've witnessed, all the miracles that their forefathers have told them, all the deliverances during the reign of the judges, redemption and emancipation from the land of Egypt. There are seven feasts that they were to do to commemorate God's love and care for them and guidance, pointing all to the Messiah who is to come. Despite all that, and in light of all of the warnings that Samuel's giving them, they told God, "No way, Jose, we want a king." Beloved, we can offer no excuse for these poor folks. Sometimes we're no different than them in the way that we behave. And then verses 20, that we also may be like all the other nations, that our king would judge us and our king would go out and fight our battles. Well, I thought God gave the judges to Israel. Moses was the one that established the judges, did he not? And the elders and those who would make up the laws, did he not give the Levites to be the judges and the arbitrators? My word. And what's this idea about God not being available to go before his people? All you got to do is read some of the excerpts there in the judges. Read some of the events that happened even during the reign of the kings, when God had his army, had his people all set up to go to battle, and he told them, "I'm going to go in front of you. I'm going to take care of the enemy myself." My word, even at this stage in their history, they were priming their ancestors down the line to be confronted with the Messiah and to treat him poorly. Okay, all of their descendants that would follow them leading up to the coming of the Christ. And when their descendants finally did come in contact with the Christ, they murdered him. And I see the seeds of that national evil being cultivated right here. Well, verse 21, Samuel goes back to the Lord, rehearses all these words. And then verse 22, God tells Samuel, "Okay, go ahead, tell the people they're going to get their way. Now tell them to go home." And in the chapters to follow, we're going to see the beginning of the kingdom with King Saul, King David, King Solomon. Then civil war, the breakup of the 12 tribes, 10 to the north, 2 to the south, and then you know the rest of the story. Well, may God once again choose to bless his word. Amen.